Most of us can point to moments in our lives that were unexpected and just changed everything for us. And I'm thinking particularly today about changing things for the better. There are those moments that things tend to fall apart. But I'm thinking today about unexpected times when, whether it's a phone call or a conversation, and things get maybe more complicated, maybe there's some opportunities in front of us. You've had those before, probably, haven't you? The phone call out of the blue. Hey, we're thinking about you for this opportunity at our organization. I can still remember, by the way, exactly where I was the first time I talked to Paul Hurd on the phone. You have what? You want to talk to me about that? Do you know who I am? Sometimes it's a phone call. Sometimes it's a conversation just in the break room or in a hallway where someone taps you on the shoulder and says, you know, there's something that I think you're capable of doing. We need your help. Sometimes those moments are big and flashy. Sometimes those moments are really small and really not all that extraordinary. Sometimes it's just a Tuesday morning that started out like any other Tuesday morning, and by the end of the day, you have brand new things in front of you and a whole lot of complicated questions. Many times, the call from somewhere else, or even the call from God, doesn't come with a lot of fireworks. It's often pretty understated. But when it shows up, it can change everything. So it might not happen in the sanctuary. It might happen on a shoreline, which is where we find ourselves today in our story. It's four men in a boat and a few words that changed everything for them. Today in our Holy Ground series, we find ourselves at the Sea of Galilee. It's a freshwater lake, about 13 miles long, surrounded by all these little fishing villages. Everyday people who settled down, built a family, started a small business, and just went about their own lives. And we find ourselves there today with people who will hear some words that will change theirs forever. In Matthew chapter 4, we've gotten through the birth stories of Jesus, and we've seen John the Baptist come on the scene. We've watched Jesus go to the wilderness to be tempted. And now Jesus comes out of his time of temptation, and he hears that his friend John the Baptist has been put in prison. And so Jesus flees to this region called Galilee. And we find him there today in Matthew chapter 4, beginning in verse 18. Matthew tells us that as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and his brother, Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. So notice here, when Jesus goes to call his first followers, he doesn't go to the temple. He doesn't go to the academy. He goes to the dock. Matthew continues with Jesus' words to them. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. And at once, they left their nets and followed him. So Jesus just says simple words to them in Matthew's version. Follow me, I'll send you. And at once, they leave their nets and they go. Matthew tells us that going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother, John. They were in a boat with their father, Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. If some of the language here seemed repetitive, I think Matthew's doing that on purpose. So two brothers, Simon and his brother Andrew. Yes, Matthew, are they brothers? We didn't catch that. Two or three times he mentions sons of Zebedee and the father Zebedee. And I think Matthew here is really emphasizing the family ties that are at stake. These are relationships that may be disrupted because of the call of Jesus. And these are fishermen. These aren't the elite he's calling. These are everyday people doing everyday jobs. They're small businessmen who are probably making just enough to live. In fact, there's a museum in Israel where a boat is housed. It's called the Sea of Galilee boat. And in the 1980s, two brothers appropriately found this boat stuck in the mud along the shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's about 30 feet long, dated to the first or second century. This is exactly the kind of boat that these brothers would have been on. This is not glamorous. It is not majestic. But it's where their place of business was. It's where they first got a call that would change their lives. And I want you to notice some things about Jesus' call. It is very specific. Come and follow me. It is disruptive. Leave your family. It's immediate. At once, they leave their nets. And it is relational. Not go do something for me, but come be with me. He doesn't hand them a syllabus. He doesn't give them a map. He just says to them, follow. And what's interesting about this is that in Jewish tradition, typically, the rabbis didn't go ask for followers. The followers had to go sort of apply to study under the rabbi, much like you would at an elite university that doesn't accept all applicants. So what they would have been used to is finding a rabbi they wanted to study under and going and ask this person, can I study under you? Jesus does it a little bit differently when he calls his followers. There's a little bit of precedent for this, though, in this time period. There's a story told about Socrates who stands in a doorway one night and blocks the path of a young man named Xenophon. And Socrates begins to ask him questions. And he says, young man, do you know where I could go to find some goods? And Xenophon says, well, you know, I hear there's a great market in Athens. You could probably pick up some clothes and some eggs there. And Socrates then says, do you know where I can go to find how to be good? And the young man has no answer. And Socrates says to him, well, come with me and learn. That's close to what's happening with Jesus, but still not quite the same. Socrates is offering wisdom. Jesus is offering himself. And he says to these followers, come be with me. Come follow me and do life with me. Not come work for me. Not come do these tasks. Not come learn these principles. Come follow me. That is the call of Jesus to these people. It's a compelling moment. But I don't want us to move too quickly past what these men walked away from. They walked away from their nets, which were their source of income. They walked away from their boats, which is sort of like their business capital. They walked away from family and all the expectations and relationships and even legacy associated with that. And they had no idea where they were going or what they would be asked to do. Fish for people? What if they don't want to be fished for? Some of them might not like that. Follow you where? Is it going to be easy? Are we going to get into some trouble? What will this cost me? I'm sure they had those questions stirring in their heads, but they followed before they had any answers. Sometimes the call of Jesus might say go. Sometimes the call of Jesus says leave. And no matter what the call is, it's going to come with a cost. There was a man named Clarence Jordan in the 1940s. He was a New Testament scholar, academic, but really what he was a person who followed Jesus. And he started a farming community in southwest Georgia called the Koinonia Farm. It means fellowship. And it was a multiracial farming community that lived together and worked together and worshiped together. And as you can imagine, it was not everyone's favorite thing in town. And so he started this farm, and then the bullets came, and the crosses burned, and the ministers and local officials told everyone just to stay away. And Clarence chose not to fight back with violence, but he did choose to defend his organization and his people. And so he asked his brother Robert, who was an attorney, "Hey, Robert, could you help us out? We need some protection. Can you draft some things? Can you go advocate for us?" But see, Robert had a problem. He had aspirations. The governor's mansion was in sight for him. And so Robert said, "I can't help you." And Clarence said to him, "I thought you follow Jesus." And Robert said, "Well, I do follow him, but I'm not going to get crucified over it." And Clarence said to him, "You're not a follower of Jesus then. You're an admirer. And Jesus does not call us to take up our admiration. Jesus calls us to take up our cross and follow him." Many times the call to follow Jesus comes with great sacrifice. That's sort of a grand story. Let me bring it down a little closer to home. And let me also say, the call to follow Jesus, more often than not, does not look like full-time ministry. There are way more non-ministers than there are ministers. But sometimes it does look like that. You may have read some articles in the past few years about the minister shortage. What's happening? Where are our ministers? Why is it so hard to find them? And sometimes people will ask me that question, "What do you think is causing this?" And I'll politely say to them, "Well, how would you react if one of your kids came to you and said they wanted to go into ministry?" "Well, I know the questions we ask. Are you sure there's any money in that?" Well, I don't know. That's just not very prestigious. "Have you thought about law school?" "Oh, you well do that, but you sure need a backup plan. How about you major in finance and just be a great volunteer at your church?" All of us in ministry have heard those things. And as a parent, I get it. But at the risk of sounding a little self-serving, I just want to say that I still believe that ministry is a high and noble calling. I like what I get to do most days. And if there are kids and teens in here who have thought about that, I just want to say, like, I will be your biggest fan and advocate. So to some of us who might talk people out of that, maybe instead we need to say, if Jesus is calling you, perhaps you'd better follow him. By the way, sometimes the ministers I know who've done a great job didn't always start out doing that. I've known some excellent ministers who pivoted mid-career. One of my best friends in ministry is named Andy. And I worked literally next to him for 14 years. And he started out not doing ministry. In fact, he was down here for a few years getting his MBA from SMU. And then his home church called him and said, "We need your help on a few things. Could you do these?" And all of a sudden, he's in full-time ministry. And I worked next to him for 14 years, and he's one of the best ministers I've ever known. There's another guy I've come to know. He started out in the business world too, publishing to be specific. He was kind of a back row guy, as he would describe himself. And then a minister and an elder and some others started saying, "Could you help lead this Bible study? Could you do something part-time on top of your full-time business job? Actually, could you just come join your home church staff full-time?" That guy's name is Jim Barnett. I work next to him now, and he's one of the best ministers I've ever known. I don't think God is calling everyone to full-time ministry, and I don't think that is a higher calling than the ways many of you serve, but it is a high calling. And I just want to say, it's worth it. And if you're feeling the tug of that at any point in your life, whether it's before you go to college or mid-career, let's talk, because I still think God calls people to serve the church in those kinds of ways. There are many kinds of sacrifices that we might be called to make, and I just wanted to advocate for that one. Let's go back to the shore now. 3 years later, after all the miracles and all the failures of the disciples, after the cross, after the resurrection, some of these men are back on the same shore. And now John is telling us a story. And these men go fishing, maybe out of habit. Maybe they've returned because they think everything failed. Maybe they're doing this out of grief. And I wonder if these men are asking themselves, were these last 3 years worth it? Our teacher went and got himself killed, and we're not sure what to do now. Was leaving our nets really the right move? But then early one morning, they see someone on the shore, and they're not sure who it is, but maybe it steps from just where 3 years ago they were called to follow Jesus. Steps from where they left it all. And there's a familiar look and a familiar sound to this man, and they smell the bread, and the moment just tastes familiar. And he says, "Friends, do you have any fish?" And just like that, it's him. And no one is asking anymore, was it worth it? Jesus is there again, not with thunder, not with commands, just with breakfast, a fire, some fish, some bread. And he's at the place where they first dropped their nets to follow him. And now their calling is renewed. In fact, after that meal, Jesus turns to Peter, who's betrayed him, and he reinstates him. And after Peter three times confirms his love for Jesus, do you know what Jesus says to Peter? Follow me. That call comes again, not just at the beginning, but in the middle and at the end of our lives. And when Peter first got his call, he didn't know what was in store. And now Jesus is telling him in veiled but pretty clear language that Peter's going to get himself killed for following Jesus. And Peter still doesn't know that later on there'll be a huge church named for him in Rome. Andrew doesn't know that he'll become the patron saint of countries later on. These people who were called to follow Jesus, they had no idea what kind of pain, and they had no idea what kind of glory was in store for them when they said yes. They didn't know any of that. They saw Jesus, they heard "follow me," and they did it. You don't have to be a fisherman, friends. You just have to be someone standing in your ordinary life when Jesus passes by and says, "Follow me." And maybe you've heard that voice before and you've wondered if you were wrong to follow it. Maybe you've tried to go back to the nets. Maybe you've never heeded that call in the first place. And so the questions for each of us today are clear. What is Jesus calling you to do? And are you going to do it? Some of us have been following Jesus quite a long time. But like he did with Peter, Jesus is not going to stop with just the first invitation. He says, "Follow me," again and again. But sometimes he offers fresh paths and deeper questions. And if we're honest, we get comfortable. We will follow him, but we too would rather not get ourselves crucified for it. We built our lives around faith, but maybe not around risk. But you've probably still felt it. It's a tug. It's a whisper. It's a sense that God is asking something new and fresh of you. Maybe he's nudging you to start that hard conversation you've been avoiding, or to serve someone you find inconvenient, or to forgive someone you thought you were done with, or to mentor someone younger than you, to go on that mission trip, to give more than you're comfortable with, to take seriously a tug toward ministry or leadership. You've felt it, but you've delayed. You're still holding the net. What are you going to do? Some of you have never followed Jesus, but you feel it. You feel him calling you closer. You see what life with him would be like. You've thought about it. You've asked a few beginner questions, but you're not sure you want to take that step. I want you to know that we'll have elders in the prayer room today. I'm at the back. Don't ignore that. Jesus may be calling you to follow him. You're still standing there, holding the net. What are you going to do? The call is clear for all of us today, whether we've followed Jesus for a long time or we're just considering that first step. Jesus is standing on the shore calling. He's asking you to leave your nets and to follow him. You're still holding the net. What are you going to do? Let's stand and sing.